From the National Humanities Center, this is Wayne Pond with Soundings, conversations featuring scholars and visitors at the National Humanities Center. Sigmund Freud and the Culture of Psychoanalysis. That's the topic on Soundings this week, and the title of a book recently published by one scholar who's completed a fellowship at the National Humanities Center. He is Stephen Marcus, a professor of English at Columbia University, and my guest this week on Soundings. Also participating in the following Soundings discussion about Sigmund Freud is Dr. Arnold Cooper, a professor of psychiatry and director of training at the New York Hospital, Cornell Medical Center. According to Stephen Marcus, Sigmund Freud asked questions that were pivotal to the development of neuroscience and to the inception of psychoanalysis as a medical theory and therapy. But Freud is also an important contributor to the formulation of the modern world with respect to our understanding of the narration and interpretation of human experience. Stephen Marcus from Columbia, Arnold Cooper from Cornell University Medical Center. Our topic is Freud and the Culture of Psychoanalysis. Stephen, let me be at the risk of being too personal given this topic. What motivated you to write this book? Why would an English professor take on Freud?
Well, there are several reasons for that. One, he's a marvelous writer. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Cooper has talked about him as a literary artist.
He's a marvelous writer, not only as a stylist, but as a combination narrator and expositor. He has a unique way of arguing. I call this way a kind of a narratory exposition, or an exposition which has narrative qualities to it, so that although he's arguing, the argument affects you as if he were telling you a story at the same time. So one of the pleasures of reading Freud is the pleasure of getting to be intimate with a mind that is always several steps ahead of you.
And this was part of your motive.
Oh, yeah. So this was part of what attracted me to him. Two, he has this extraordinary relation to modern culture and to the modern world. Let me put it this way. What Freud has done in this area, let's say, when we come to something like deviant behavior, such as homosexuality or something like that, Freud has led the culture to be less immediately judgmental, and less immediately negative about things like homosexuality or various other kinds of deviant behavior, such as sexual exhibitionism, you say, or even masochism and things like that. Instead of saying these are bad people, ideally one says these people have something not right with them, and we should look into it and see what's wrong. Now, this has been vulgarized too, because what we say now about these people, instead of, well, they're bad, we say they're sick. Mm-hmm. Now, and the culture has taken Freud in and vulgarized Freud, and has become, on its vulgar side, a kind of therapeutic culture, so that instead of judging everybody, you say, well, they're sick, and they need help. That's not such, I mean, it's probably better than quick judge, negative judgmentalism, but it's not actually what Freud would have said and liked. But he certainly has had this effect on the culture of moving things like homosexuality and other kinds of deviance out of the immediately moral area and into another area.
Dr. Cooper, we're talking in very broad generalities. Let me ask you to respond in those terms. How would you characterize Freud vis-a-vis what? Questions of belief. Do you think of him in those terms, for example, as you deal with your patients? Or is that simply out of the Freudian ballpark?
Freud himself was a thoroughgoing atheist. He believed that a liberated mind would not believe in God. He saw religion as a derivative of infantile attitudes towards the father and the dependency of infancy, and felt that it might be possible for enlightened or better analyzed people to give up such dependency attitudes. History has probably already proved him wrong in that regard, that he underestimated the extent to which people wish to retain beliefs in magic, beliefs in great powers on which they can depend. I don't think that would have concerned him terribly much, except insofar as he was not being an analyst but a moralist himself, and felt, had his own notions about what's the higher good of mankind. Uh-huh. His concern would have been to say that whether the culture is religious or not, psychoanalysis can add important explanatory words about it, can understand why it is that that is the case, and perhaps even in an advanced version of psychoanalysis, can understand a little bit about why one culture may be more religious mm-hmm. than another.
Stephen Marcus?
I agree with that, but would go on to say that although he was an atheist and didn't like religion, Freud was absolutely fascinated by the subject.
Oh, yes.
He couldn't let go of it at all. Fascinated by Judaism, by Christianity, and wrote at considerable length about both, even as he was disparaging of them. Disparaging, yes, but absolutely fascinated with them from beginning to end.
As an aside, I might mention Peter Swales, who's been interested in Freud lately, become a well-known name, recently commented that one reason why Freud is the central figure in culture today, as he believes Freud to be, is that Freud's interests were the interests of culture. Mm-hmm. He was interested in religion. Clearly, this is a system, society that's interested in religion. He was interested in drugs. Freud was very involved with cocaine and other drugs.
Right.
He was interested in craziness, this is a society which is very involved with that. Uh-huh. He was interested in illegal activities, the illicit activities going on in the underside of life. And one can go on about Freud's major interest in how they dovetail mm-hmm. with what concerns society.
Dr. Cooper, again, you are a professor at Cornell Medical Center. Let me ask you to continue your speculation there. What do you think Freud would make of what science and culture have done to him in the 1980s?
I think he would be terribly distressed that he's become as popular as he has and as misunderstood as he has in his view.
What Stephen Marcus refers to as the parlor game?
The parlor game, the bowdlerizing, the vulgarization uh-huh. of much of Freud. So that would have distressed him. He would have been, I think, secretly enormously pleased at the same time, as I think he was even during his lifetime, that in fact he had won a great victory and had become a cultural mainstream hero in a way that he initially never imagined, but certainly as a conquistador wished to achieve. I think he would probably be distressed that analysis has taken some of the turns that it has towards perhaps giving up the biological route that was so important to him that he wished to retain. And I think he would have just been very distressed that so many of his followers made out of him a belief system rather than a continuing set of investigations. Mm-hmm. He had the most open mind, the most flexible, adventurous mind of any analyst.
Mm-hmm. Stephen Marcus?
I think he would have been extremely pleased at the fact that he was has been solidly installed as a cultural hero. I believe that was his greatest ambition,
yes.
and in that,
yes.
that he has succeeded.
I think he would never have admitted it.
No, never. But this is really what he wanted to be, was a hero, uh-huh. A cultural hero, and that's what he has become. I think he would have been distressed at the kind of therapeutic culture that we have.
Now, you're talking now about what we call the self-help movement?
The fact that people, instead of being dealt with responsibly as grown-ups and so on, we, as it were, tend to deal with them in terms of therapy. If someone behaves badly, we say somebody is sick.
Yeah.
I don't think Freud would have liked that at all.
Dr. Cooper?
There's a famous letter from Freud to a friend of his, a minister, in fact, named Pfister, in which they're discussing a patient, and Freud refers to this man as a scoundrel. And Freud had clear beliefs that illness does not excuse somebody from moral judgment.
Let me put it to you this way. Did Freud believe in evil? Did he use a word like that, Stephen Marcus?
Oh, he certainly did believe
uh-huh. How did he characterize it?
Well, he believed that that human beings have a certain quantity or built-in set of impulses, which he called aggressiveness,
uh-huh.
and that these aggressive impulses could assume various configurations, such as the thing that he experienced latest in his life, which was the Nazi invasion or Anschluss in Austria. And he was in no two minds that these were not only wicked but evil
mm-hmm.
People, and he couldn't care 2 cents about whether they were sick or not. He knew that this was something very bad in the world and didn't hesitate to say so.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Cooper?
I agree fully. I mean, Freud was never in conflict over the idea that understanding did not automatically dismiss moral judgments. Mm-hmm. And he would have understood fully and continued to make his judgments as harshly as ever.
Mm-hmm. Stephen Marcus from Columbia University, Arnold Cooper from Cornell University Medical Center. Our topic is Freud and the Culture of Psychoanalysis. That's the title of your book, Stephen Marcus. Tell me about Freud's, his own inheritance. He would have known Socrates, Know Thyself. How did he draw all of his own circumstances together to produce the work that he did?
Well, Know Thyself is not only Socrates. It's written at the Temple of Delphi, and it's the
Oracle.
The Oracle. You consult the Oracle, and the Oracle is what says Know Thyself. But it's certainly fundamental to Western civilization, and it seems to me no exaggeration to say that Freud had a great deal of Western civilization at his command.
Tell me about, for example, his education.
Well, he was an extremely well-educated Central European of the Victorian period. Mm-hmm. He had gone to a classical gymnasium, and he had acquired what one acquired there. And he was first in his class, so he was a very, very good student. He was fluent in the classical the languages of antiquity, that is, in Greek and in Latin. He knew not only German, which was his native language, and its literature, but he knew French very well. He knew English very well. He didn't speak it very well, but he read it fluently, mm-hmm. and he could read and speak Italian as well.
Did he think of himself, Stephen Marcus, as what, a synthesizer? At one point in our conversation, I remember you saying that that he didn't have an idea of his own importance, the stuff that he was doing at that time. Do I have that right?
I don't know if he thought of himself as a synthesizer. He thought of himself as someone who was, as he said at one point, lucky enough to chance upon certain discoveries. Mm-hmm. The most important of these clearly being his elaborated idea of the unconscious mind and unconscious mental functioning. And this, too, is not an idea that he could claim sole responsibility for. It's an idea that had been there before in Western culture and Western civilization, and throughout the 19th century was growing in importance. That is mm-hmm. to say, there were other people who very clearly did have an idea of an unconscious mind, poets, novelists, even other scientists and physicians. But Freud came at the end of this development and brought the whole idea the whole idea of a large unconscious reservoir of mental functions to consciousness and to, as it were, a kind of systematic formulation. Mm-hmm. And in that, he was very central.
Dr. Cooper?
Freud was not a particularly modest man. I think he knew what he had done. And I think it was terribly important to him to think of himself as indeed the discoverer of something different about the unconscious, the discoverer of the dynamic unconscious. And that's a terribly important difference from the dynamic unconscious, that is an unconscious in which there are ideas and wishes and desires and thoughts which are striving towards expression that influence behavior, and the old-fashioned unconscious which had been there for centuries, just the knowledge that there are things within us about which we don't know. Mm-hmm. And that was a crucial difference for Freud, perhaps vital in understanding what psychoanalysis brought to the new knowledge of mind. And there he attributed to himself the idea of discovery. I think also it was very important to him to be able then to bring together his discoveries with his knowledge of literature, because what literature did for him was to give him the opportunity to demonstrate the universality of his discoveries. Uh-huh. So that it was not an accident that he referred to it as the Oedipus complex, to be able to prove that what he had discovered in 19th century Vienna had also existed in pre-Christian Greece.
The program is Soundings. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. You're listening to the concluding segment in a series of discussions about Sigmund Freud. The Soundings panelists are Stephen Marcus, a professor of English at Columbia University, and Dr. Arnold Cooper, a professor of psychiatry and director of training at the New York Hospital, Cornell Medical Center. During a fellowship year at the National Humanities Center, Stephen Marcus completed his book, Freud and the Culture of Psychoanalysis, published in 1984 by George Allen and Unwin. According to Stephen Marcus, Freud is a central figure in the transition from late Victorian English science and culture to 20th century conceptions and practices of neurobiology and psychotherapy. In his book about Freud, Stephen Marcus traces the dynamics and contradictions that underscored the inception of psychoanalysis as a theory, as a discipline of inquiry into the narration and interpretation of human experience, and as a new kind of therapy. Here is Dr. Arnold Cooper.
Well, there have been great changes and great shifts, not all of them always acknowledged among analysts or among the public at large. I think we should first recognize that when psychoanalysis came along, it transformed American psychiatry. Psychiatry, which had been largely classificatory, had no interest in the mind per se, was interested in symptoms a bit, and had no way to think about how symptoms came about, was absolutely revolutionized by Freudian thought. And for a long time, it was the core, the only core, of psychiatry in America. There was nothing else interesting to think about. Neurobiology, in fact, didn't exist. There was no good science of the brain at that time. Over the last 30 years, there's been a big shift as neuroscience has begun to grow, and particularly in the last decade and a half, with the increasing sophistication, we begin to learn things about the brain. And for a while, that led to a tendency to think that now we can dispense with psychoanalysis. We'll learn about the mind by learning about the brain. And as I mentioned earlier, now sophisticated people realize that we're going to have sciences of the mind and the brain, and they will have to learn how to speak to each other and cooperate with each other. So I think it's in that context that we should look at some of what's going on in psychoanalysis, because psychoanalysis, even though it always had a principle of understanding things in terms of multiple causes, was also simplistic until relatively recently. Mm-hmm. And I think psychoanalysis now increasingly recognizes that it provides modes of explanation which have to be added to by other modes of explanation. We're now much more involved in what's called object relations theory, an understanding of how people relate to each other and form images of themselves and other persons in their mind and have their behavior determined by that whole history of their relations with people, not only by the nature of instinctual drives. We've also learned a great deal more about the interactive aspect of any encounter of two people, so that now psychoanalysis views the transference, that is the reaction of the patient to his doctor, much more in terms of what's actually happening between two people, rather than, as in the early days, the patient acting something out on the blank screen of the analyst. And now that we recognize that this is an interactive process, the atmosphere in the consultation room has changed. Analysts don't try to act so much like blank screens. They recognize that the patient does recognize their characteristics, responds to them, and it's their responsibility to know what it is that they're inducing in their patients, as well as it is what the patient is bringing to the encounter.
Just a parenthetical question for Stephen Marcus. You've written this book, Freud and the Culture of Psychoanalysis. It would be possible, I suppose, for somebody on the street to listen to this discussion, walk into a library and pick up all kinds of incredibly sophisticated scientific material. How is it easy to read Freud, Stephen? Where would you start? Just give me a few sentences about that.
Freud can be easy, and he can be extremely difficult, and it depends on which text you're picking up. If I were to recommend a text for somebody who is entirely unacquainted with Freud, the book I would certainly recommend are his introductory lectures to psychoanalysis, which he gave during the war in Vienna.
Now, these were spoken to an audience.
They were spoken to an audience in the medical school, and then he wrote them down after. He lectured extemporaneously always and without notes, always. And he wrote these lectures down after he had delivered them. And they come to a very handsome, a very large size volume, and it begins very, very simply and grows steadily more complex.
Let me stop you, Stephen. Was Freud playing fast and loose with his own ground rules here, reconstructing his own history as he did this? Do you see anything there?
No, what Freud would do, as any founder of a revolutionary movement or discipline would be characteristically at intervals in his life, he would retell the story of psychoanalysis, that is to say, how it came about. And so he would begin somewhere near the beginning and go through up to the present point of its development.
Somehow or other, I think of the Ancient Mariner.
Well, he had this story to tell. It is a story of his own life, which was largely a mental life, what was going on in his mind. And he told it in a variety of ways and on a variety of occasions and in different forms. And this set of introductory lectures seems to me one of the clearest and most brilliant expositions of psychoanalysis ever made. And it seems to me that anybody with the most general kind of education can pick it up and read a good deal of the way through it and get a great deal from it.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Cooper?
I agree with Professor Marcus. I would add a caveat or two. One is that there isn't a single Freud, and that Freud radically changed his theories at several points, perhaps the most radical being when he wrote Inhibitions, Symptoms, and Anxiety in 1926, where he really turned the theory upside down. He had a different theory of the formation of symptoms, a different theory of the role of regression, and it really led to a complete transformation of the way we thought about neurosis, a transformation which took a long time to come about. I think the introductory lectures are an essential first reading, but I think one of the problems in understanding Freud is that many people think that they understand Freud by reading one or another piece of him. I would add another point, that understanding psychoanalysis is very different from understanding Freud. That psychoanalysis today is a vastly different enterprise from what it was even in Freud's last writings.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Cooper, let me ask you to comment very briefly. Is it not easy? Maybe that's not the right word. How is it to teach Freud? Is this a challenge in itself? Do you feel that you have a fairly clearly specified set of items to, you know, to bring to your students? Is that an agony by itself?
I don't think it's an agony. I think it's a challenge, as all teaching is. I've taught now high school students, college students, medical students, and analytic students, and I find that each of them finds things about Freud absolutely fascinating. Uh-huh. They find the ideas are not that difficult to latch onto, and they begin then to develop their own thinking about it as far as they wish to go. Mm-hmm. So it is teachable, it is learnable, but again, I think one has to be cautious about knowing that one is learning something about psychoanalysis and thinking that one has now learned Freud or psychoanalysis, neither of them being coterminous.
You don't want to chisel this stuff in granite. Stephen Marcus?
Well, I would say that Freud is like any figure of great complexity, that is to say, like any writer of great complexity. You don't understand them from any one work. You know? You have to understand them in his development, mm-hmm. And he is at a different phase of thought as he develops. He's interested in different kinds of things. Too. So sometimes he writes theoretically, other times he writes historically, other times he writes clinically. He's a master of a variety of styles. But in addition to being a great writer, he also did something else. He founded a movement. Mm-hmm. His most beloved and favorite child was finally the psychoanalytic movement. He left his impress on that, and it's become a very elaborate international organization with its own rules, with its own history, with its own discoveries, and with its own modifications on a vast number of fronts of what Freud wrote. So it's not as if there's just Freud, but there's Freud and what Freud did and created, nothing less than an international movement.
Mm-hmm. Continues to do.
Yes.
Arnold Cooper from Cornell University Medical Center, Stephen Marcus from Columbia University. Let's conclude our conversation about Freud and the culture of psychoanalysis. We've talked very broadly today about Freud and his influences. A lot of this, I would guess, the word Freud itself would evoke the darker images in many minds. Things I don't want to know about myself, things I don't want to know about other people. And yet I'm coming away from this conversation with the sense that that you two would be optimistic, that you are very favorable in your judgment of this man. What would you tell a general audience about Freud? How, for example, might you set a misconception straight? Stephen Marcus?
Well, I think you've made a very good point. We have been speaking about him in rather pleasant terms, and perhaps we should say some things that you are really pointing to, which is that Freud was one of the first to help us confront the things in ourselves that we try to avoid. Mm-hmm. And these are mostly, if not entirely, unpleasant things. Bad thoughts, bad impulses, wishes to hurt other people, wishes to get revenge on people, wishes that certain people should die, and things like that, which are part of all of us. It was Freud's achievement to say, this is part of all of us, and we are not knowing ourselves if we don't recognize it and include it as part of what we are. So what he did was to compel humankind to look at itself and to see that we are not the pleasant creatures that we sometimes think we are. We're much more complex, mm-hmm. we're much more violent, we're much trickier, and we're much more mysterious than we think we are.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Cooper?
Yes, Freud was very much devoted to a culture of truth. And that was a value which I think for him took precedence over almost all other values. And he felt that knowledge, knowing oneself as deeply as possible, took precedence. And that was always an onerous, difficult task. Any easily won knowledge was to Freud trivial. Mm-hmm. And so Freud would have insisted that people continue to confront themselves in the ways that are difficult, and nobody likes that. I think also that Freud would have continued, and Freudianism continues to point to the idea that people are always conflicted, they never are easily at rest with themselves, and that the beast is flawed to begin with. It's something about our nature, made wrong, if you wish, that our wishes always exceed our grasp, that we are born helpless into an environment of parents who never understand us the right way, and that we bear the scars of those wounds. It's what makes us human and interesting, but it's never without suffering. Mm-hmm. And Freud took that for granted as part of the human lot. He struggled to do his best to help people modify it, but he was never under the illusion that life could be easy or happy.
Stephen Marcus, that delicious sense of living in a fallen world, is that it?
Well, what I'm reminded of is a statement that Freud made once to one of his correspondents and disciples. He said, psychoanalysis is not a place for the exchange of pleasantries.
The program is Soundings. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. You've been listening to the concluding segment in a series of discussions about Sigmund Freud. The Soundings panelists were Stephen Marcus, a professor of English at Columbia University, and Dr. Arnold Cooper, a professor of psychiatry and director of training at the New York Hospital, Cornell Medical Center. During a fellowship year at the National Humanities Center, Stephen Marcus completed his book, Freud and the Culture of Psychoanalysis, published in 1984 by George Allen and Unwin. For a cassette copy of Soundings on Sigmund Freud and the Culture of Psychoanalysis, send $3 to the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, 27709. Next week on Soundings, a discussion about sports and American social values. My guests will be Robert Simon of Hamilton College and Larry Keith, Assistant Managing Editor at Sports Illustrated. Until next week, this is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. Support for Soundings comes from the National Endowment for the Humanities.
Listen to Soundings. This is Kim Nielsen at the National Humanities Center, inviting you to join Wayne Pond this week for the concluding segment in a series of discussions about Sigmund Freud and the culture of psychoanalysis. The Soundings panelists will be Stephen Marcus of Columbia University and Dr. Arnold Cooper, a professor of psychiatry and director of training at the New York Hospital, Cornell Medical Center. Freud and the Culture of Psychoanalysis, Part 2, some answers and insights this week on Soundings from the National Humanities Center on this station.